Last week, scarcity and abundance. Today, fear and wholeness. The party is over. The hungry guests have been fed, all 5,000 plus. Jesus has dismissed his crew of disciple waiters and sent the tired guests home with their leftovers. Little children, resting in a parent's arms, fall asleep with fragments of the most wonderful bread held tightly in their little hands. If you or I had been the host, we would have replayed the evening's events, reviewed conversations, tried to remember poignant comments and repeatable jokes. Which foods ran out, which were left over? Who wasn't able to come? And when we could plan the next get-together? Jesus does his own variation of this. He finds a place to go and have conversation with God. He talks to God about the person at the party who was weighed down by grief, the one who was hoarding food, the one who was about to give birth. He talks to God about the one who seemed so alone, the one who felt so left out, the one whose feelings got hurt. He debriefs with God the immense needs he encountered, and then he heads out to find the disciples. The quickest path seems to have been across the top of the water. If you were the God of the universe, would you not have chosen the same path? Not to instill fear or to show off, but simply because you can. To feel the waves beneath your feet as delightfully as we would experience a carpet of grass or a warm sandy beach. Of course you would. In the early morning hours, that liminal time between darkness and dawn, the disciples do not recognize Jesus. We can't fault them for this. He most likely didn't tell them to be watching for him to come walking across the waves at 4 a.m. He didn't tell them. He just appeared. Even though they had seen him working miracles and working miracles of healing and feeding miracles, even though they had witnessed him calm a storm, commanding the wind and rain to stop being so mischievous, despite all this, they still didn't recognize him. The God of surprises. The God of surprises who also happens to be the God of practicality. It was the quickest route. It was also the scenic route. A stunning path across the water with the stars and moon reflecting off the waves. The practical route. The scenic route. But also the route of truth. Jesus' walk across the water was a demonstration of the life of faith, a life which by its very nature asks us to do the impossible. We are told that these stories of the disciples sailing across stormy waters are metaphors for the life of the early church. Being a follower of the way was dangerous business in those early days. The early Christian community was buffeted by raging winds and storms which threatened to capsize it. It is no coincidence that the word nave, the word which we use to describe this portion of the sanctuary where you all sit, it comes from the Latin word for ship, navis, or possibly for boat, navicular. The rafters, which resemble the hull of a boat, inspired this term. We see it reflected in our architecture. Reverend Mark Rawls, writing in a Faith and Leadership blog, argues for navicular over navis, boat over ship, emphasizing that these two watercraft are not the same thing. Imagine a cruise ship, says Rawls. On a ship like that, passengers are participating in all kinds of activities at any given time. They eat when they want, they sleep when they want, never worrying about how the ship will navigate from port to port. But think of a boat in Jesus' day. What a different story. on a fishing boat, for example, where everyone is working together, eating together, coordinating their efforts so that they may safely reach the shore. A much more apt description of the life of a faith community. But I have a problem. I've always had this problem. It's always bothered me. So when we look up at the ceiling, our boat is upside down. I know it only works that way architecturally. I get that. But it bothers me. And so I keep thinking, is there something more to this? I'm not trying to say that our boat has capsized. I'm not. That would be an abandonment of my faith. It would be an abandonment of my trust in God's dream for God's church. Still, it makes me pause. An upside-down boat. What do we do with that? Well, here's where it takes me. I can imagine God saying to us, as Jesus said to Peter, "Get out of the boat. If you can't get out of the boat by yourself, here, I will just tip it for you. You're going to slide out and be in the water, and so you better start swimming." I'm probably making this symbol much more complicated than it needs to be. But let's look at Peter. Peter wanted to walk on the water with Jesus. I don't believe he was trying to be like God. I just believe he wanted to be immersed in the miracle. He wanted to be as immersed in this miracle as he was immersed in the feeding of the multitudes or in the miracle of the healing of his mother-in-law. I believe in this risk taker, Peter the Rock, who lived up to his name in multiple ways. First, yes, sinking like a rock, but also becoming that rock upon which Christ's church was built. He didn't do that by staying safe in a boat. He did it by daring to believe in a God of impossibility. When Peter starts to sink, Jesus reaches out a hand to him and says a little something about Peter having little faith. In the Greek, Jesus says, "Little faith one, here, take my hand." It's like a nickname. It's not a put down. It's just a statement of truth. At this point in the Jesus experience, Peter's faith is still small. If you want to get into a comparison game, it seems enormous compared to the guys who stayed in the boat, right? "Oh, little faith one," Jesus says, "I've got you. I've got you, and I will never leave you orphaned. I will not allow you to drown in the waters of the world's chaos." Perhaps Jesus is even saying, "Oh, little faith one, you can do it. Don't give up." And Peter didn't. He took risk after risk. He made a fool of himself. He made a fool of himself, and then he humiliated himself by denying knowing Jesus. Even when Jesus was at the brink of execution, even when Peter was drowning in his own humiliation and regret, Jesus reached out to him after the resurrection and said, "Oh, little faith one, I've got you. Now go out and do what I taught you to do. Feed, clothe, visit, reconcile, heal, teach, forgive, show mercy, have compassion, share." Peter did these things, these very simple things. He would lose his life for doing these simple things. No one has greater love than to give up one's life for one's friends. We, like Peter, try to do what Jesus taught whenever we recognize Jesus calling to us from the waters. But sometimes we don't recognize Jesus. Even when everything inside us tells us that it is Jesus calling to us out of the chaos, we still rub our eyes and tell ourselves it's just a trick of the light. Because sometimes Jesus calls us out into waters that are absolutely terrifying and we simply don't want to go. I think of all the truth tellers the peacemakers who showed up in Charlottesville, Virginia yesterday, the ones who gathered to denounce white supremacy, to denounce racism, to denounce discrimination in all its forms. They came to denounce hate. They looked out from their boat and recognized Jesus calling to them, and they stepped out into those windswept waves to pray and to keep vigil and to try to offer an alternative presence to the hatred and bigotry which came marching down the streets of that city. They sought to represent a God who is a God of every color of the rainbow, whose greatest dream is to see people of every hue living together in harmony. They voluntarily stepped out of the safety of the boat to walk into a sea of hatred. Who does that? Disciples do. Disciples must. And those of us who are white must take a stance in God's name. We who have been safe in the boat for so long. I'm not saying that just because you are white, your life has been easy. Every life has its share of sorrow and pain and challenge. Some of you have known too much tragedy. Sorrow is colorblind. But those of us who are white must acknowledge that we have been safe in this race boat. We continue to downplay or ignore the systems that oppress people of color. It's so easy to find examples. Just our school system, and not just here in Tuscaloosa, but it's played out over and over again across our country, where the inequality within our schools is just staring us in the face. Our broken justice system and our predisposition to arrest and incarcerate people of color over white people. The simple reality that we still have to say Black Lives Matter. Sadly, we could go on and on. God desperately needs us to step out into these chaotic waters. There's an old hymn my brother used to play on his guitar. There are, as with many old hymns, several variations depending on how you want it to rhyme. Here comes Jesus. See him walking on the water. He'll lift you up and help you stand. Here comes Jesus. He's the master of the waves that roll. Here comes Jesus. He'll take your hand. But someone decided that instead of rhyming stand and hand, they would rhyme the last two lines. And so it goes like this. Here comes Jesus. See him walking on the water. He'll lift you up and help you stand. Here comes Jesus. He's the master of the waves that roll. Here comes Jesus. He'll make you whole. Truth both ways. When our faith is small, God will rescue us and enable us to stand. God will lead us back into the boat when we need its shelter and protection. But God will call us out time and time again to face our fears. God will tip this boat and let us slip back into the waters because God knows we can swim. And God knows that that's where disciples belong. Because in the midst of all that chaos, when we are relying upon God, that's when we experience wholeness. That's when we forget our fears and allow God's wholeness to fill us. Sisters and brothers, it is that wholeness that leads to peace. Peace within and peace without. Do you desire the wholeness that it will set you free to walk on the water with God? To walk on the water and bring God's wholeness to fruition? God's wholeness for all people? May it be so for each of us. For all of us. Most especially this day for Charlottesville. And for God's church throughout this world. And let us all say together that word that affirms what we believe. Let all God's people say, Amen.